Good day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now, here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Greetings, everyone, on this nice, warm, and sunny August day. Welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, that program that's dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar, the secret societies, and the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. The Guardians of the Holy Grail was created specifically to clear up many of the popular misconceptions that have been floating around the mainstream media regarding the secret societies, Holy Grail mysteries, and the bloodline from Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Through this show, I hope to set the record straight, so to speak, with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current past members of the Initiatic Societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar that over the centuries has either been lost or ignored. You can learn about our Gnostic Templar organization and sign our mailing list by visiting our website, which is www.gnostictemplars.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course and become an associate member. There's books to buy. There's videos to watch. All kinds of interesting things there. One of the new books featured on the website is my new book called The Coming Gnostic Civilization, World Gnosis, The Coming Gnostic Civilization. And this book chronologues the movement through the secret societies to create a one-world civilization that's based on Gnostic spirituality. If you're interested in that book, there again, you can visit our website and go right to our web store. And again, our address is www.gnostictemplars.org. Now, today we have a very interesting show. We're going to be discussing the teachings of the Kemet Wisdom Keepers. Kemet, for those of you that don't know, is the first and most ancient name of Egypt. And the Kemet Wisdom Keepers teach the most ancient mysteries of Egypt. Now, before I interview my two special guests, I'd like to mention a pilgrimage and conference that I'm co-leading with them. It's coming up in October and November. And there's two parts to this. There's a conference that'll occur October 26th through the 31st. And then the second part is a pilgrimage around Egypt that will occur October 31st through November 9th. And this should be quite a popular event, so you're not going to want to wait to sign up and register, which you can do at www.sacredsitesjourneys.com. The first part of the experience, which will be the conference, will take place in a venue, a hotel, right near the pyramids and the Sphinx. And The speakers will include myself, as well as the directors of the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism. So there'll be a lot of ancient Kemet wisdom that will be disseminated, and there'll be a lot of information about what's occurring on the planet at this special time in human history. And and what we can do individually and globally to make the ride smoother as we spiral into 2012 and beyond. And part of the conference will be a private entrance into the Great Pyramid. So it's going to be quite an exciting time, I believe. And after that, we're going to have the pilgrimage around Egypt with the same speakers, myself and the directors of the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism. And we're going to be going to all kinds of places, Aswan, the Temple of Isis, Elephantine, the island. We're going to Luxor, the Temple of Khammambo. We're going to cruise up and down the Nile. We're going to go to Abydos and see the very ancient Osirian, Dendera. And at the end of that, there'll also be an option to take an extension to Petra in Jordan, which I'm really excited about. So there's a lot happening, and if you want to know the whole scoop, you want to know the whole itinerary, visit www.sacredsitesjourneys.com, and that will give you the whole itinerary and show you how you can register. And don't wait, because I think it's going to be a very popular event. Now, my two guests today are two of the co-directors of the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism. They are Youssef and Patricia Iwayan. Sorry about the bad pronunciation. I'm working on it. They are Kemet Wisdom Keepers, rather, and they live right next to the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx. Lucky them, huh? They have an incredible store full of amazing Egyptian art that they're selling and daily creating. Youssef and Patricia are currently spread the special knowledge that was once taught by Youssef's father, Abdel Hakim Awiyan. Hakim, as he was known, recently passed on, today his wisdom is being taught by many of the prominent Egyptologists and wisdom keepers around the world, including Youssef and Patricia, who teach his wisdom in the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism. And they are co-directors of that school with my wife, Andrea McCona Pinkham. And if you'd like to know more about that, visit their website, which is www.egyptianinitiations.com. So greetings, Patricia and Youssef. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Hi, Mark. Hi. Thank you.
Great to have you on the show.
Happy to be.
Yeah, well, we're similar in a way. We're both living in the land of the deserts, aren't we? Where it's nice and sunny, but it's also very nice and warm. Actually, most people call it hot, I guess, wouldn't they?
It's hot.
Yeah. So you really need to be a lover of hot, I think, to live in these climates, and I am. I think you all are too, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
Teach you to appreciate the shade.
Yes.
Well, let's get right down to it. I'm very interested to know more about Kemetology, and I don't know too much about it. I want to know as much as I can. So, first of all, tell me exactly how would you say that Kemetology is different from Egyptology?
There's a big difference. You said something very important, that Kemet is one of the most ancient labels for this land. And Egypt is very modern, related to a sentence called Het Ka Ptah. And Ptah was a symbol followed by the Templars of Amun, very modern time comparing to Kemet, which existed before the written language on the walls. So when people like Herodotus and Manetho wanted to write history, 200 years before Christ, they had the sources for what was written on the wall, which is known as the monumental writings. So, after a long time, lifetime of research for my father, he, of course, was looking for answers, same like everybody else in that field. And he knew that he got to go further than what's just written on the walls, because Kemet existed before the written language. So lots of the monuments, such as the pyramids and the temples, existed before the writings. And the writings were added to it later, at the dynasty time. And those who wanted to write history took what was written there and translated, and that's also based in the Greek-Roman understanding. Then it was translated to everybody to understand it through the Greek-Roman understanding. This is Egyptology. Kemetology, we can't say it's written in books, because it's a field for research about all the mysticism. My father chose that one because Kemet, which is related to the silt or the mud coming from Ethiopia with the Nile to Egypt here, shows a very deep tuning with nature. And with this kind of understanding, you could come with this kind of results, which we see today as mysticism. That's why it's called Kemetology. One more thing. Egyptology, most of it is about like dating the monuments, the locations, and describe
naming the monuments, the pharaohs, and believing their kings.
Yeah, things like that. But Kemetology is the source for the word alchemy. Is Kemet. It's the same source for that word. And alchemy is about experiments. We see this in the designs of what we know, or what Egyptologists know as tombs, which is the pyramids, and some of the temples, especially one like Sarabit, which is very high tower, has lots of experiments and alchemy in it, different kinds of powders and materials that were used in this kind of experiments. So we can say Egyptology is a Greek-Roman understanding for what was written on the walls, and Kemetology is the most ancient and also the new research for what we need to know about how these things were amazingly constructed and why. So we have in Kemetology, one of the most important parts is the advanced machining, and some of my father's colleagues are doing great work on it. Lots of research in all kinds of shaping and lifting pieces of stones weighs like 600 tons back then.
And we believe that the Kemetian civilization existed from 10 to 65,000 years ago.
Yeah, a whole cycle of 65,000 years. That's what my father told me.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Well, it sounds like it's a whole new way of looking at Egypt. Yes. a whole other language to learn, to really understand Kemetology, and that it will take you much, much further back than Egyptology will, which will basically goes back to the historical first dynasty, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
They never recognized the first dynasty.
The Sphinx and the Great Pyramid, I know that according to Kemetology is much more ancient than Egyptologists are telling us. How old are you how old are these monuments really, and what were the original purposes for, as far as you know?
Well, how old we can say specifically? Like in Egyptology, they say the Great Pyramid was built, like, and they say that number was perfect, like 3,551 years
ago.
You know? And of course, can't be specific or like exactly right about it, because Khufu himself was never found, and the only inscription for him inside is very weak writing, similar to those who like to visit the place and just add their names in it. You know what I mean?
No bodies were ever found.
Yeah.
In the three.
The whole construction was hollow from inside, no writings. Some of the other pyramids were opened, and the box in it was used as a tomb.
Later,
and the Book of the Dead was carved on the walls. That's and then closed. And then some other people who came and opened it and saw the box with a mummy in it, so they got this, like, this has to be a tomb, you know? So the history really got built above each other.
Build on misinformation,
yeah.
and misleading information.
Like finding writings in a place, then they relate the place to that person or to this king or to that title, while the place existed long time ago. Only this was time that that person was a king and he took over these places, get the support of the temples, and then when people who wanted to write history, they saw his name there, so they relate the place to him. We can see this very clear in Saqqara and
many of the places
many of the sites.
We're going to stop on the tour, yes.
So, as we said, it can be all the way to 65,000 years. And the only things to define this through their connection was astrology. I heard my father was talking about the middle pyramid once, and he said it's around 12,500 years, which is way, you know, far from 5,000 years. And the Sphinx can be up to
56,000 years.
Yeah, 56,000 years. Anywho, finding out the specific date that they were constructed in my opinion, is not important as how and why. So, through also lots of research, how led us to very fine awareness of nature and the cycles of nature, and very powerful tune-in with our senses and abilities to deal with what surrounds us. So, we can say this very simply. These devices were based on frequency. They were designed to develop certain and different kinds of frequencies that can be used in almost everything. You know, in energy level, everything is frequency. So having a powerful frequency, depending on the location and on the frequency of the sound and on the elements such as water, fire, and air, and earth.
Crystalline rock.
Yeah. And the combination of different kinds of stones, specifically chosen, not just random. And the proof for that, we know these locations as the Bernetters, or the houses of nature. Every Bernetter all over Egypt has the same combination of stones, like sandstone, white calcite, granite stone, and limestone, and diorite, and basalt. So the combination is so big. Imagine what we can get out with all this combination of elements and sound frequency and location, connection with astrology, which I don't have a solid proof for it, but every time we gather all these things, the only way it leads is to the stars. So,
you know, they mapped everything out as above, so below, and there's a connection, obviously, with the heavens.
The researchers are going now through how, and it will lead us to why. Because we have, of course, lots and lots of argument with the Egyptologists that they don't believe in Kemet, you know. So you can see that.
I personally really appreciate this knowledge that you are reviving, or it's probably not even that's probably not the right word to popularizing more on the world stage today. Because as a traveler, the one thing I always notice when I go to a foreign country is that the Western archaeologists that have been there have decided that this is the way history occurred in this country, but invariably you find that the natives are all saying something like almost entirely different, you know. And who are you going to listen to? Well, the natives are passing down wisdom that from word of mouth, from person to person, for thousands of years. Now, who are you going to believe? Them or an archaeologist that come by that comes around and does a little bit of carbon dating? And his carbon dating says there was someone there, 2,000 years ago. So that must be the very beginning of civilization there. Well, you know, it's a bit ridiculous. So my question is, I know that your dad, Yosef Hakim, he had this, incredible amount of wisdom of ancient Kemet. And was this passed down to him? Or where exactly did he get this knowledge? Where did he receive it from?
Well, like somebody just passed it to him, because he spent all his life researching, and I mean all his life, like since he was a child. He used to go to the sites and he wanted to study, to understand, and after he went through lots of the hieroglyphs, he knew that it doesn't have the real fine answer for that, the mysticism, the mysteries that we see. So it was very also like strong shift for him to undo all what he studied for years and able to replace it with the truth. And I would say he worked hard. He really worked hard to gather this information. And he passed us some powerful keys in order to continue. And we don't have to go, because if I wanted to analyze every information he gave me, I have to live a lifetime to study what he studied. But I have to take what he gave me and
go further.
You know, trust in his opinion and his awareness, as he taught me that self-awareness is the most important thing to understand Kemet. So, God bless his soul. He did work hard. And I remember some people who used to come to learn from him from all over the world. He used to come and like get amazed. He knows astrology. He knows the sources of language, of where the words came from, which that was his hobby, his hobby. To like to know the sources of every word we say, where is it related to, and what does it really want to say. And lots of his information, when they get him sometimes really impressed, and they ask him, how do you know all this? So he said, the answer, we live and learn. That was his answer. So I answered it same like he does. He lived and he learned. And he teached as well.
So when you were growing up, did you accompany your dad to a lot of the temples? So how was he able to teach you this wisdom?
I did went with him in some of the groups, and that wasn't the key to learn. But the key, it was Hakim himself, God bless his soul, that when you communicate with him, he elevates you to a certain level of awareness that you can see, as he used to say, Suf. Suf. Suf actually was the name of this language, and it's not hieroglyph. The name of the culture as well. And the Suf culture was based on a deeper understanding of nature and self-awareness. It's also the source for the word fellow Suf, which is Greek word, means the brother of the Suf, or the higher wisdom. And it's the source for the word philosophy. So, through lots and lots of conversations, and questions from my side, and answers from him, and questions I heard people asking him, and he answers that, and my own research, and my own like awareness to understand, because you know, once you are on a certain level of awareness, truly, these monuments will start to communicate with you. They will start to tell you things. And it's not just words. It's understanding, something that will shape the way you think. For example, the way he showed us different machinery. Ancient Egyptian, they built the pyramid with, yes, and hammers and chisels and things like that. It's impossible. And he showed us other cuts, which possibly were done by frequency, by pure frequency. And I'm going to share some of these things with the people, because it's hard to describe it just by words. You know, you have to see and then start to put the things out for them to understand. So, inshallah, in our tour, next tour, we will share lots of the machining and stones and things like that, which proves, of course. And other things like in the monuments, things that doesn't have any writings on them, and then in other locations it's the same things but have writings, you know, and things like that, which will show that really these monuments and these devices were there before they add writings to it. Then they wanted to understand them through the writings, and probably those who wrote on it, they didn't have a clue since 5,000 years as well. Because if they had, they wouldn't have to quarry their own monuments to build the other temples. If they have the same techniques, that they could develop these huge blocks of stones and shape it any way they want, they wouldn't use the same monuments like here, for example, to build the tombs and things like that. And instead of bringing their own from Aswan, how many miles? Like 300 miles of the waves. So some of the techniques were lost, but some of them lived. And powers from the ancient creation, which was only in the temples, not to everyone like it used to be in Kemet time. It was in the temple. And in some of the times, writings was used to mislead and manipulate the people in order to control. And the same story like what's happening in many different parts of the world nowadays. So to see and to know about chemetology will raise our self-awareness, no doubt about it. Done it with people.
Well, I think that we can safely say to people is that if you want to know the true wisdom of Egypt, it's all contained within chemetology. And I'm definitely envious of you, Youssef. I have heard on the grapevine that you can read the hieroglyphs right off the walls of the temples, which I'm extremely envious about. And I'm looking I'm looking forward for you to translate some of those for me when I'm with you in a month's time or so. And there are certain special things that I know we're going to be doing on the at the conference and on the pilgrimage that relate specifically to the Kemet school. One place we're going to that's definitely off the path for most tourists is Abu Ghraib. I guess we're going there for a sunset meditation during the time of the conference. Can you explain something about that site? What makes that site special?
First of all, it's a Berneter. That's what makes it so special. Same like the Great Pyramid. It's a power plant. Like what Christopher Dunn has like labeled these locations, and it has lots of the dynamic system that was there, showing that this is really far away from being a tomb. The pyramids there, and there are shafts in the underneath the ground, and
huge,
there are huge, yes, blocks of rock crystals, like, they call it white calcite, but usually calcite doesn't have this amount of crystal in it, so it's really crystallized, as if it was affected by some kind of frequency, or the frequency that it was pulsing itself in its days when it was functioning. So, we will see proofs of the advanced machining. How did the frequency that was used to do some of the carvings, which is not statues, by the way, did change the structure of the stone through that frequency, and how it isolates from each other. And Abu Sir is the land of Osiris, that's what it was called, as the book of Stephen Miller was Pooh Wizard. He wrote it with my father, of course. And I love that place myself. It's like connected to the whole universe. There is something, a design made out of white calcite for this rock crystal. It's called the Hotebra. It's a very powerful design. You know the Merkaba? You heard of the Merkaba? Of course, yeah?
Oh, yes, right.
It's the same shape, but like in a flat form. And Hoteb means food or peace. And Ra is the light. So the symbol of it is what we feed from the light, you know? There are pyramids, of course, there as well. And there are something else also, the discs. There are many different shapes of discs there, and has like drills in them for in and out for the water. Shows like very high technician of mechanism to be done with stone, not with metals. We can say, for me, Abu Ghraib and Abu Sir is like a small classroom for chemetology. I take the people there and show them through these examples, and then when they visit every site, they have a different way to look at the site than everybody else. So that's why this place is very valuable. They don't value it as much in the tour companies. You see, there's not much statues there to see. But we have to know, before it was carved into statues, it was blocks of stone. It was used for the stone itself, not for the shape.
For the energy devices.
Yes, same like the one in the same combination you find near Saqqara in Memphis. The place called Memphis, or this is where they call Het Kabtah, which the word Egypt is coming for, and also Kabtah is the source for the word Coptic, which we will see that they inherited also all the monuments and they affected it with their carvings and culture. We have the most ancient, you can't say a church, it's a temple for Christianity. It only exists in Egypt, because everywhere else there are churches. So we say Abu Jarab is a small classroom for climatology that has huge amount of information, and the location itself just makes you feel right at home once you enter that place. We're going to be together next tour, inshallah.
Well, it it sounds as though the founders, the builders of ancient Kemet, obviously they were from an extremely, extremely advanced culture, civilization. I know that there are places in Egypt that you go to that appear to be possibly landing pads for maybe, you know, extraterrestrial craft. Do you think that there was some extraterrestrial influence in the building of ancient Kemet?
Yeah, I think.
Hakim actually thought that Abu Jarab was a landing spot for extraterrestrials.
It wasn't like landing the way we think it is,
no.
Aircraft is going to come down and that. It was more to teleporting and gates.
Picture a wormhole or a stargate.
Yeah, gates for like different dimensions and worlds. That's what they call Pitah. He's the creature who come from the blue, with knowledge and wisdom and things like that. So we had the connection. Abu Jarab is a place called pulse frequency to the whole universe. And possible landing devices there through teleporting, not through like...
And the Giza Plateau. I mean, there's lots to be said about what's been happening there.
Well,
the whole plateau is a stargate.
There's a lot that can be said about that. Well, what would you say about it?
About what specifically? Extraterrestrial?
About what's happening on the Giza Plateau right now?
Well, unfortunately, nobody's looking for the truth. Everybody's looking for treasures.
Beautifully said.
There are huge, and I mean huge, amount of shafts. I'm certain of at least 3 levels of these shafts and wells and tunnels and rooms with no writings, with nothing in them except some of them has this very powerful sacred geometry, which is the same sacred geometry like the stela of granite in front of the Sphinx. The Tutmosis in the 19th dynasty came later. He didn't know. The stela was representing something like a reflector of frequency. Mm-hmm. In that place, to perhaps opening or connection. It doesn't have to be coming and going physically, but it can be opening the connection between us and other worlds. So, of course, Thutmose is very modern. So, there are lots of excavations made by Dr. Zahi, and somehow it can lead us to the truth and can lead them to treasures. So, those who used these tombs, those who used these shafts and rooms underneath the ground, underneath the pyramids area and other areas, they used it for as tombs in the fourth dynasty. Hatib Haris, which is supposed to be the mother of Khufu, is buried under the ground in one of these shafts. So there is no clue that Khufu, her son, was the builder of the Great Pyramid at all. And we can see how when they used these shafts and rooms underneath the ground to use it as tombs, all the statues and that they carved inside these places in underground is engraved like deep in the level of the wall. It's never, the statue is never outside the wall, it's always inside, which shows that they came later and they engraved this inside, because if you're the one who's doing this in the first place, you would save your energy and make the statue outside, which will be more easier. But as we said, the shafts existed before the idea of tombs, which was a way of manipulation by the Templars of Amun, way modern than Kemet. And we can see these shafts, the valley of the kings and the valley of the queens, it's the same shafts, and it was also used here in the pyramids area, in Saqqara. So these shafts need to be researched clearly, like trying to make a map for it and put light into it and really research for, we can say, Egyptology or Kemetology, but those who are seeking knowledge, not treasure hunters. You know what I mean? So unfortunately, everybody go for research. He's a treasure hunter. He's not actually, he's looking for information.
Well, not everybody, but yes, many have
that. Those who have the authority.
Well, we hear in the West that underneath the sands of Egypt, there's a whole network of tunnels and caves and underground temples and you name it. Do you know the entrances to these tunnels, and is it possible for you or to some of the other native Egyptians to go down into these tunnels?
Well, the levels of land has changed as we're talking thousands of years. So it's not really hard to find the shafts. It has hundreds of ways to enter. Lots of it is locked by the government itself with doors of metal and things like that.
In fact, they're locking them every day, more
of them. The ones that they were going to find leading to the map, they shut it down immediately. But we still have some, what they call that.
There's a few places that we can show.
We can enter and show the people. There are these. It was made originally for water to run underneath the area, and the water is needed for the bare nether to be activated, and in the same time, the running water will generate a frequency of sound that through the designs there, like frequency amplifiers underneath the ground in these shafts, will amplify the frequency until it reaches the pyramid And then the pyramid has it also its own sound amplifier,
which regulator.
Yes, the, also can be called frequency regulator, that it will put that frequency in the right tone that it will need to, you know, resonance with the box and the rooms inside the pyramids. And then it will start to pulse. But this is just a very small part of the combination.
Well, it all sounds exciting for an explorer like myself, and so I'm looking forward to seeing the entrances to some of these places and maybe even venturing into one or two. Well, we have a few more minutes. And what were you saying, Joseph, that you're going to push me inside of one and then close the door, or what were you saying?
No.
I said, you're not going to come to Egypt with us, and you'll, go home without seeing that. Even if it's illegal.
That, Mark, and much, much more.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to hold
more
you to that.
Explanations, more than the mental explanations, that when you walk into the sites, something inside us tells us, oh yeah, I know that, you know, there is something here. No humans, no the basic power of mankind existed here, and this existed through it, so it reflects. And all the work of the ancient here in Egypt was based on that, on cycles that's already running in nature, and how can we do our cycles to reflect with these cycles, so our work will be perfect, just like the nature work, you know?
Fabulous. Well, if in the remaining time of our show, if you all could speak a bit now about specifically about the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism. And I'm sure people would like to know how they can get involved, and are there lessons that they can study, or are there levels within the organization, within the school? Can you speak specifically about your school?
Sure. The school is one of a kind for one reason. There is no teachers. We share. When you are interested, you are involved. And, of course, it's a free of charge. It's just like, thank goodness for this new technology of the internet that can make us all communicate with each other. And that's how we communicate. And if anybody has a question, he will share it and will have different answers for it. We can't push anybody to believe what we believe unless he analyze it and understand it and accept it for himself. And then we keep sharing the information until we go to the right level where we will figure out some of the mysteries. So, lessons, mostly about self-awareness, and the self-awareness and to tune in with our senses, this is the basic thing of becoming Suf, which is a stage of this school. So, we were planning to do some, share some of the teachings as classes to the whole world, and we will make also levels for those who can accept what we share, and then they want to go deeper, then words on the internet wouldn't be enough, because the teaching is not based on mental here. emotions are involved. Because when you come and feel, you will believe, even if your mind is refusing what you hear.
Well, field work is almost essential to actually understanding and feeling the spirit of ancient Kemet. You can even believe in books and in things written down, simply because anything written, if it has
would
to be written,
Hashem.
Yeah, if it has to be written, it's not the whole truth.
Yeah.
You have to go further. You have to go see with your own eyes.
Yes.
And so we can give an introduction. We can invite you to be fellow researchers, but you need to come and do field work on your own.
What with us?
With us is ideal.
It's much better.
Yes. But of course.
And the school, we may be the ones who did the work for it to be online, but it's not. It's not ours. It's everybody's. Especially those who know that they are involved in the school. They want to or not.
If you're interested
in
anything connected with what we talk about, you are part of the school.
Exactly. And there are people. Yeah.
It sounds like the best opportunity to learn the wisdom of your school is to come to Egypt on one of these pilgrimages and or one of these conferences and learn firsthand by going out to the different sites. Is that right?
At a certain level, you can't go further until you come to Egypt. Whatever we say wouldn't change your frequency until you come here and your body absorb the frequency from the real thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. The energy of Egypt, the
energy
of the land
in the
itself.
Monuments.
Yeah. Oh. The even the temples were built as energy devices, and as you go through them, the architecture of the temples themselves will alter your consciousness. It has to be experienced in presence.
In most of the temples, we see Kemetian fingerprints. It's not fair. The basic power in the temple was made by the Kemetian to develop energy. Then the Templars, after they inherited and took over,
the priest.
Then they,
yes.
They added.
And the Hanuti or priests, Hakim called them the Hanuti, they actually hid the secrets of the Kemetians. They're hidden within the temples in plain sight. If you can look at the symbols with open eyes, not as what you read in your textbooks, but look at different levels of meanings for the symbols. Even the hieroglyphics had different levels of meanings. They're not what the textbooks tell you.
They say about it lots, and but remember that it existed before the written language.
Mm.
At some of the time, the writings, when every symbol meant something, like each what we know as a letter was the word, you know, itself. That was the real, you know, powerful hieroglyphs, you know. Hieroglyphs, is, by the way, is a Greek word, means the holy writings. Hiero and graphia, you know, means the holy writings. So, and some of them is so modern, we can recognize it through adding lots of letters to it to add the right transliteration for the sentence and things like that, which is modern and mostly about afterlife and things like that. So we will share with the people what is this. And actually hieroglyphs are all over the earth. You know that, of course. Some in Australia, some in Hawaii, and so on. They're all over.
The Grand Canyon?
Yeah.
Well, I've been to Egypt a few times, and I know the value of going to these temples and pyramids and so forth, but I also know the value of being guided by people like yourselves that have this immense knowledge to help me to interpret what I'm seeing and feeling as well. And so that's why I'm so much looking forward to coming over and seeing these these places with you at my side to help me to truly understand what they're all about. And so I can't stress it enough, the value of having you all there to guide and point things out. And so I can't encourage people enough to sign up either for this amazing tour. And you just don't know day to day, as well as whether you're going to be able to get into a lot of these temples and pyramids and so forth. I understand there's some plan to even not allow people to go in the Great Pyramid in the not too distant future. And so if people really want the full experience, I guess, you know, now's the time to come, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think so many are being called to come to Egypt now. They feel that need, and once they just open the door and say, yes, this is the time, it's amazing how the universe opens the path and makes it easy for them to come.
Our experience is in the what they call the King Chamber in the Great Pyramid is unforgettable. Life-changing experiences, for real, for me. I see it through my experience before, in like, not like you tell people that your life will change. My life has changed through understanding things like that, which really useful to us in our daily life with everything. To be aware and to be tuning in with your inner senses, not just the physical senses, the emotional and the spiritual senses as well. And our journeys, I can't say it's in, like, everybody do the same journeys, because hardly anybody will go to the monuments for searching for self-awareness. They might want to see a big statue, something like that. Not all the tourists as well are excited in the same field. Some people just want to come and take a picture and things like that, you know. But those, which they are also not little, are seeking knowledge that will be useful for them, shaping their energy, raising their awareness
and their vibration and
frequency. They call them spiritual people, and the Egyptian government fights them like hell. These are the type of tour we run with, you know.
But we always find that the right people, the combination of people that come together for our tours are always just amazingly, I don't know, what's the word, synergistic, or it's just an amazing energy that we always form with our groups, and the experiences are just awesome.
Well, I, for one, am really grateful to be able to come over there, to be asked to come over and speak my two cents, whatever, and to be able to visit,
yeah,
and to be able to visit these amazing places with you all that have this incredible knowledge, and I'm excited, and I'm sure that the people that have been listening to this program are pretty excited about it by now. Do you all have anything else you'd like to mention about the coming conference of pilgrimage to complete the show?
Well, I would say Egypt has been always like a mother for those who need to feed, for what she feeds, and she still has lots to feed. That's what I can say. That's what Egypt offers.
It's a life-transforming experience. I don't think anyone that has ever come to Egypt has gone home and not been changed in so many ways.
Even the most simple things, like just being in the boat in the night.
Huh?
It's amazing. Just that. Because some of the locations in Upper Egypt, especially Aswan, is all you can see is the bank with just some fields, kids playing and animals playing. View.
You feel
so
like
you can be in a live moment in ancient Egypt. Mm. This scene has been there for thousands of years and didn't change. This is one of the things also that feeds us when we it's fun and knowledge and almost everything in it.
Yes, it is. And well, on our journey, you will see and do things that you would not experience on other tours.
Yeah.
I can say that honestly from the bottom of my heart. There are so many surprises and special happenings and occurrences and things that will show you that other tourists just never even know exist, let alone have the opportunity to see.
And we will leave
explaining.
Yeah. We will leave explaining lots of the astrology to you.
We look forward to hearing
because
everything you have
astronomy
to
astronomy in ancient Egypt is a big
deal. Well, there's going to be a little astronomy, a little astrology, and probably a lot of alchemy that I'll be talking about. So, that's what Egypt's famous for, or Kemet's famous for, and now when we're going through the changes that we are on the planet, that wisdom of that alchemical wisdom of ancient Kemet is more valuable now than ever. So. So it's going to be an exciting time to be, to be resurfacing and reviving a lot of this ancient alchemical wisdom of ancient Kemet. So, thank you too for being on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your great wisdom of Kemetology, and it's going to be an amazing journey come this fall. And I hope that you out there listening to this. Can make plans to come. And again, if you are interested in knowing the entire itinerary and even to register, you're going to want to go to this website, which is www.sacredsitesjourneys.com. We kind of run it together as one word, sacredsitesjourneys.com. And it's all right there, and it's all amazing. So once again, thank you so much, Yosef and Patricia. And look forward to seeing you soon. Now it's going to come fast.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you too.
The weather will be a lot more.
All right. Well, love and blessings to both of you.
Back to you.
Thanks.
Bye
bye. Bye bye. Bye. Okay. So that's. Our interview for today, and we'll be back again in a couple weeks, beginning of September, and at that time, I think it's September 2nd, if I'm not mistaken. On that day, we're going to have Alfred Freddy Krupa, who's the Grand Master of the Knights Templar of Solomon Hamelech, and he's going to be talking about that particular initiatic organization, and we're going to be talking about the Holy Grail Alliance that we are creating amongst his organization, my organization, and one other organization from Eastern Europe. So you're not going to want to miss that. That should be quite interesting, quite exciting, and a lot of new information. So until we meet again, in a couple weeks, always remember that the Holy Grail, the Grail that we're constantly looking outside of us, is always right inside our own heart. So go there and find it. Bye for now.